from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. And in this half hour of Forum, we're going to shift our focus to the nation of Honduras, where a coup took place on the 28th of June. The military overthrew and removed Honduras President Manuel Zelaya under orders of the nation's Supreme Court and with congressional support. That's despite the fact that President Zelaya's political party is in control of the Congress. The issue was a referendum proposed by President Zelaya, who had become increasingly more closely allied with Venezuela leftist President Hugo Chavez, to modify the nation's constitution as Chavez did in Venezuela and to extend term limits and allow Zelaya to run again for president. Roberto Micheletti has been installed as president of Honduras, and coup leaders have closed Honduras airports in an ongoing effort to prevent President Zelaya from returning to the country. In fact, on Sunday, President Zelaya was blocked in his attempt to land in Honduras. And in this Forum segment, we're going to discuss the ongoing political crisis in Honduras. And joining us to do that is UC Berkeley professor and director of the Center for Latin American Studies at UC Berkeley, Harley Shaken. Welcome, Harley Shaken.
Nice to be here.
Good to have you here. And I guess the first question that I need to ask you is, couldn't this have been done through legal channels and a legal route rather than a coup d'etat?
Oh, absolutely. This is the coup that didn't need to be. And it's sort of strange because it was so preemptive. The president, Zelaya, had proposed a non-binding referendum about whether or not a constitutional convention should have been held. That vote was supposed to take place at the end of June. Had it taken place and had it won, a big if, then there would have been another vote in November with the presidential election about having a constitutional convention. If that had passed, an even bigger if, it would have been up to the next president to implement it who opposed it. That is, either of the two presidential candidates were largely opposed to it. So with the notion of a non-binding ballot to cause the president to be arrested in his pajamas at 5 in the morning and deported in a coup is a rather strange set of events. I think it reflects some deeper tensions in Honduras, but it was hardly necessary and in no way is comparable to the crimes the president is accused of committing.
Well, let's talk about those deeper tensions because, Alvaro Vargas Llosa, whom I know you're familiar with, had a couple of columns about this, and he was opining that there's a kind of megalomaniacal populism that has split between the old oligarchy in Honduras, which to a great extent President Zelaya had been identified with. He was one of their own. And Vargas Llosa calls him a political cross-dresser. His socialist ties to Chavez, or what seemed to be socialist ties to Chavez, and leftist ideology seems to be really the mix here that's brewed those even in his own party against him.
Well, I think that's really, really overstated. The underlying situation, I suspect, Alvaro Vargas Llosa would agree with. Honduras is a very polarized, very poor country, the second poorest in Central America. It has a very unequal distribution of income and two political parties that are relatively close in the broad issues. There's this sense of a small oligarchy, increasingly out of touch with a much broader population. Paradoxically, President Zelaya comes very much out of that oligarchy. In the second half of his four-year term, he clearly moved a bit to the left, largely as a nationalist and as a populist. He did things that were far from structural but deeply unpopular with the oligarchy, such as raising the minimum wage by 60%. Now, a lot has been made about his links with Hugo Chavez, and I think those are really dramatically overstated.
No, there's even been suggestion that Hugo Chavez had a role in stoking this whole...
Oh, totally. And I think all of this, you know, to put this through the Chavez prism has little to do with what's going on. President Zelaya has moved closer in formal terms to Chavez for a very simple reason. He's getting subsidized oil and other subsidies from the Venezuelan government. So with those subsidies in mind, he's very pro-subsidy wherever it's coming from. He's become part of the Bolivarian alternative that Chavez proposes and sided with him in ways that certainly have annoyed the U.S. government but have hardly been defining. This, I think, to see this through the Chavez prism, misunderstand what's going on, which is a deeply polarized society in Honduras, weak institutions. institutions, some political ineptness by the president, but a response that's disproportionate to what he's accused of.
Well, in fact, I suppose the link to Hugo Chavez had a good deal to do with the idea of extending term limits to run again, which seemed like it was following his pattern. But the same could be said about Uribe, a conservative of Colombia, right?
Oh, absolutely. And the same could be said about many Californians who would like to lift term limits. I would like to see term limits lifted or rearranged. I don't think that's part of the Chavez playbook. Much has been made of that, but Zelaya in Honduras would not have been able to run for re-election in November of this year, no matter what happened with this ballot initiative. It was viewed as strengthening him should it have passed, and he is not all that popular himself, or at least wasn't prior to this coup, given the fact that the Honduran economy is in the dumps, as much of the rest of the world is right now, and that in a very poor country, that increases the misery and the political dissatisfaction.
We're talking with Harley Shaken, UC Berkeley professor and director of the Center for Latin American Studies at UC Berkeley. And I'm wondering where we can look now, Harley Shaken, as far as Honduras. There has been support for President Zelaya from not only President Obama, but from the OAS, the Organization of American States, which demanded he be reinstated. And now you've got Costa Rica President Oscar Arias, who is trying to pretty much bring his good offices and resolve this conflict. Perhaps some have suggested with amnesty, but at least to mediate it. Where do you see it going?
Oh, I think that's a very positive development. And I think the significance of Honduras is not the country per se, to be very direct, but the precedent that it sets. It attracted universal condemnation in Latin America from President Uribe on the right in Colombia, certainly to President Chavez in Venezuela, from President Calderon to President Lula. The OAS, the Organization of American States, voted unanimously to condemn it. So the fear is that in its small way, it sets a precedent that Latin American leaders are very, very reluctant to reestablish, given the history, the horrific history of military coups in the region. President Arias, the Nobel Prize winner in Costa Rica, he won the Nobel Prize for addressing issues of civil war in Central America in the 80s, is his offices and his prestige, I think, could be very, very important in certainly diffusing the situation and likely leading to some kind of negotiated settlement. So I think the coming days and weeks are going to be important to watch.
And spending this segment of Forum with Harley Shaken and, of course, with you, our listeners, in fact, I'd like to offer you an opportunity to join this conversation about Honduras, which has been getting, by the way, I was in Europe, extraordinary coverage there. You, if you have questions or comments, are welcome to join the program now. In fact, our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your call. So if you have something you'd like to ask or contribute to the conversation, feel free to call. Again, available to you whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Join us at 866-733-6786. And this certainly has geopolitical implications throughout Central America and in that whole region. You can also join us by email, of course, and if you'd like to send an email, it's forum@kqed.org, and I'm going to go to your calls and emails here forthwith. Tell us a little bit about the man who has been installed as president, Roberto Micheletti.
Well, there's a fascinating story here. He's from the same party as President Zelaya. In fact,
Their wives were best friends, I was reading in the New York Times today. Yeah.
Absolutely. President Zelaya supported him as his presidential candidate in the upcoming election in November from his party. He lost in favor of the current presidential candidate from the party. So they were close friends, political allies. But Micheletti has turned very strongly against him in terms of, you know, assuming the control of the de facto government. Now, I think the rhetoric has been very harsh and very, very unbending. I think it's a mistake to view the rhetoric as the reality, with President Arias involved, with the U.S. clearly involved, seeking to defuse the situation and to have a return to a true constitutional government there, I think we're going to see some important negotiations ongoing there.
We don't look to Micheletti or Micheletti then as a potential dictator or anything along those lines?
Not really. In that sense, the coup is a bit odd, simply because there's a presidential election that's upcoming. But were he to remain in power, and were the presidential election to take place against this backdrop, the results themselves would likely be viewed throughout the region, if not throughout the world, as tainted. That would ensure that the incoming government would have far less legitimacy. And Honduras is very, very dependent on international trade. And most of that, two-thirds of it, is to the United States. So it's a country that's economically very vulnerable. The institutions are weak to start with. Should this situation, you know, just fester and continue, it would delegitimize already weak institutions and make a tenuous situation far more tenuous.
They are weak institutions, as you say. However, as I said in my introduction, the military removes Zelaya, as you said, in his pajamas late at night, under orders from the Supreme Court and with congressional support.
That's true, but it was a highly unorthodox procedure. That is, constitutionally, if you have a problem with the president in Honduras, as in the United States, the legislature can impeach him. They chose to avoid that route and go right to the troops and the pajamas, which was a lot faster, but hardly constitutional. Also, the Supreme Court is often invoked in Honduras in this situation, and we view sort of the analog as the Supreme Court in the United States. Far different. The seven justices of the Honduran Supreme Court are far more politicized. They are elected by the Congress for seven-year terms. So you've got a situation that was politically charged and reflected a political divide versus a constitutional crisis. What he is accused of is holding a non-binding referendum. Now, that may be wrong, but that's hardly the ground to overthrow a government. I think what frightened some of the elites that were involved in this was the notion that he was becoming increasingly populist and that some of these measures might gain traction. Zelaya himself didn't have much of a base. His party was fractured. He had not a lot of support within the party, let alone elsewhere in the Congress. He was gaining some support in social movements and groups within Honduras, but this was tenuous and formative. I think what his opponents wanted to do is to cut it off.
He's gaining support particularly in some of the rural and poor areas, wasn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
Let me go to our callers. And again, if you'd like to join us with Harley Shaken, it's toll-free 866-733-6786, or you can send us an email, forum@kqed.org. And we go to Sam, who's just returned from Honduras. Is that right, Sam?
That's right.
Yeah.
I returned on July 4th. I'm American. I own property in Honduras. In order to own property, I have a Honduran corporation. I have many friends who are in business, Americans, and others who are in business, all on the island of Roatan, which is part of Honduras. So we were somewhat separate from the problems because we were on an island 30 miles off the coast, and there were still tourists coming in, although we did have a curfew two nights. But the thing is, Mel Zelaya wants to be a dictator. He wants to nationalize property and businesses. He pays the peasants of the equivalent of like $26 to vote for his so-called fourth choice, which was basically to give him very unlimited power. So what we are watching down there in Honduras is a man not as smart as Chavez attempting to become a dictator in Honduras. Now, Honduras doesn't like the idea of dictators, so they wrote into their constitution, which is a fairly recent document, that they can, if the president has 1 4-year term, because they don't want people staying in there for too long and getting too much power. And Zelaya started breaking laws that were worthy of the congressional attention in February, I think. In March, they started investigating him. They presented him finally with a list of charges and the opportunity to either go to prison for a long time or leave the country and not come back. So he chose to leave the country and not come back, except that he came back or is trying to come back. Now, Hugo Chavez says he has his army masked and it's going to come in and install Zelaya. Venezuela is going to reinstall Zelaya into Honduras.
That's a very different narrative than certainly even what we're reading in a lot of the press. I mean, as Harley Shaken said, most of the press accounts have President Zelaya taken away at 5 in the morning in his pajamas. But what about the caller's narrative with respect to essentially wanting dictatorial powers and, again, following the paradigm that Venezuela saw of Chavez?
I think what's going on in Honduras has little to do with Venezuela in that regard, for better or for worse. I think what it amounts to, let's assume that Zelaya does have dictatorial ambitions.
Or nationalizing, like Castro, that kind of thing, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. How in the world is he going to accomplish any of this? There were no charges other than holding a non-binding referendum in terms of major constitutional violations. So he's got less than 6 months to serve in his term. There's an election that's taking place in November. No matter what would have happened, he was not going to be on the ballot. So first of all, that's equating the desire for a second term with dictatorial powers. And second of all, he may have fervently wished for 4 terms, but there was no route for that anytime soon. As I mentioned before, had everything taken place that Zelaya would have wanted, a big set of ifs, then the implementation of having a constitutional convention would have been managed by his successor, who was a political opponent and opposed this very notion. It's quite easy to see in a Honduran context, you know, the enthusiasm or lack of it with which this would have taken place. So I think we have to do 2 things. First, whatever Zelaya's ambitions were, there were few routes to get there, number one. And number two, I think it's very counterproductive to put what's taking place in Honduras in the Venezuelan context. That is simply not what's going to take place here. I think far more important is the notion of establishing a precedent where there is a dispute over a political issue and the very quick outcome is military involvement and the expulsion of an elected leader, whether you like him or whether you're his firmest opponent. And I think that's the great fear here, and that's why we've seen such unanimity of response from everyone in Latin America. In part, someone like Jose Miguel Insulza, the head of the Organization of American States, who's played a very central and, in my view, very constructive role in all of this, is the fact that he spent much of his adult life in exile. He's Chilean, and he had to leave the country under the Pinochet dictatorship. So you've got a lot of Latin American leaders today who have that as part of their background, and that's why you've got the sensitivity to military involvement.
I want to thank the caller and move on to more of your calls. Rafael joins us next. Morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I am a returned Peace Corps volunteer from Honduras. I got back about 2 months ago, and I had one comment and one question. My comment was really just to echo what the guest said about weak institutions. I was living in a small town, kind of at the community level, but my impression really was that there was not a lot of difference between the two main political parties, and that there were a lot of rivalries within the political parties, and that it was this kind of oligarchy, this upper class of politicians who viewed political office and getting positions in these institutions as kind of just a way to get theirs, and that the integrity of the different government institutions there were always the first things to be sacrificed when there was an opportunity to get power or get money or anything like that. And so it seems like, while no one had ever gone so far as a military coup to expedite things, it's not all that surprising that it happened, given who's running the country. And my question is, where is the other party? My understanding is that a lot of this has been happening within Mel Zelaya's own Liberal Party. Micheletti is from the same party. The Liberal Party has at least half of Congress.
More than half, actually.
More than half.
Yeah.
What is the Partido Nacional doing? And not that I think it would really change things, but isn't this going to help them in the November elections?
Yeah, what about the opposition party, Harley Shaken?
You know, that's why the specifics of the situation are arcane and confused, to say the least. The presidential candidate of the National Party basically initially endorsed the notion, according to The Economist magazine, of having a constitutional convention. He didn't seem to have a problem with it. Whether he's changed or not, I don't know. Both parties united, as did much of the Congress, in terms of endorsing the removal of Zelaya, but whether that reflected anything deeper or the expediency of the moment is hard to say. Clearly, this is going to impact the election, but in what direction, I think, will depend at least in part on what the outcome and how quickly the outcome takes place. One of the fears that some involved in this process have is the current de facto government will simply try to run out the clock, that is, to sit at the table long enough so the weeks become months, and then before you know it, you're on the eve of the election, and Zelaya's return is simply symbolic, if that. I think Zelaya's going to work hard to avoid that, and the Latin Americans want to see a broad return to constitutional government in a real manner. But clearly an impact on the political process. Hard to see at this moment specifically what that impact is going to be.
Next caller is joining us from Roatán, Honduras. Good morning. Da Vinci, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to make a note to your guest, or I disagree with his net, about that Honduras had the opportunity to impeach Mr. Zelaya before this got out of hand. What Mr. Zelaya did at the 11th hour, he changed the name of the opinion poll to not an opinion poll, but a call to a constituent assembly. So basically, the night before the poll was to occur, he changed the rules of the game so that what he would do the next day was conduct a poll that he was administering, that his people were administering. They were going to tally it, and then they were going to announce the results. I mean, he had there was no other controls to make sure that referendum was actually honest and legitimate. And so if he had control of the poll and he could make it turn in his favor to say yes, the people were calling for a constituent assembly, then he could have basically that very night sacked the Supreme Court, sacked the Honduran Congress, and called for a constituent assembly to change the country's constitution. That is why the military had to act with such urgency to remove him from government.
There have been a number of charges along these lines, Harley Shaken, that there was some shenanigans with that poll, as the caller suggests. What can you say in way of shedding more light on that?
Well, I think whether or not there were shenanigans related to the poll, clearly what took place, even in the words of the caller, was preemptive. It is a bit reminiscent of Pinochet's rationalization for overthrowing the Allende regime. And I don't want to say this is analogous to it. It is absolutely not analogous, but both were coups. What Pinochet said was that Allende was on the verge of becoming profoundly undemocratic, not that he had done anything undemocratic already. Were there shenanigans? There could have been, but had the shenanigans taken place, then that election could well have been challenged in the Organization of American States. And had that challenge not been effective, you would have still had to have the so-called fourth ballot box in the November election to ultimately approve having a constitutional convention. So anything else is speculation. I can't comment, you know, in any direct way on how many shenanigans there were or weren't, but I think that's not the issue. The issue is that the charges are preemptive, and the remedy was the actual removal of a government that sets the worst possible precedent for Honduras, but in some ways, more importantly, sets a very, very bad precedent for the rest of the Americas. If every country in Latin America acted this way, we would have a highly unstable region, and we would have huge problems with development at a particularly critical moment.
Let me try to get another call on. Max, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Thank you for a good program. A quick question about the U.S. role in all of this. It would appear that Obama is on the same side as Chavez. In addition, I would say that Chavez seems to be on very good terms with Senor Insulza. He was not always that complimentary towards him. I'll take my U.N. say of the year. Thank you very much for a good program.
Thank you for the call. Harley Shaken?
Well, I think that's very, very overstated. I think the U.S. has played a positive and constructive role in this. President Obama has said unequivocally this is a coup. He wants President Zelaya restored, not because he agrees with him, but because he agrees with the principle of democratic government and elected leaders remaining in power. So the U.S., I think, has sought behind the scenes to avoid this. And with this having taken place from the president through Secretary of State Clinton, there's been a real move to resolve it with minimal or no violence, no additional violence. I should say two people have been killed already. And the notion is democratic principles and constitutional government are the goals that have been put out there. So the seeking to equate this to Chavez or the Bolivarian alternative, I think, really is like superimposing the Cold War onto everything, which was a disaster in the 1980s in Central America.
Well, we will continue, obviously, to watch this with a great deal of interest. And Harley Shaken, many thanks to you for joining us for this half-hour segment. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Harley Shaken, again, is UC Berkeley professor and director of the Center for Latin American Studies at the University of California, Berkeley. Another hour of Forum coming up. We're going to hear a fascinating story about a master counterfeiter in a new book by Jason Kirsten. Join us for that. It's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.